Today is the 13th of December, 2013. Thanks for joining us today. We have a real treat in store today. We're going to be talking with Tim Johnson, an author of two books on the football series during when Leeds was a championship team in Wales in the 70s. Stay tuned. This is Virtual Saguaro. We'll be right back.
I let my
sang, I don't know if you remember Des O'Connor?
No.
Des O'Connor had a song called Careless Hands, You've Got Hands, and the whole crop came out as he came out at halftime in front of them. They all sang the tune Careless Hands, which was in Top of the Chop Pops. So this is what it's called, Careless Hands. Mm-hmm. And we want to say that, you know, that's really something that Gary can deal with now, but it has, you know, haunted him in many ways, it's Gary Sprigg, oh, you're that rubbish goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. And Gary played for Leeds in the top 10 performances of all time in appearances. So we consider how many players have played. He's number 10 in all-time appearances. Mm-hmm. So my view and view is that it can't have really been that bad.
Tim collaborated with Stuart Sprake in the writing of two books, Careless Hands, The Forgotten Truth, Gary Sprake. And the second book was called Kurt, The Alan Curtis Story. But let's go back for a moment and learn about Tim's background in history and love of sports and how it all began.
Well, I come from a very sporting background. My dad was very keen on sport, was very sporting. And to be honest, when we grew up, there were no video games. I think I actually bought the first ever video game, the old Grandstand, it was called then, where you had the two in Swansea for £35. I remember it had ice hockey and tennis and just had the ping in the middle. It was in the late 70s.
So we used to call that Pong.
Yeah, Pong. No, Grandstand it was called. And it had various, but the same thing of table tennis, ice hockey and
yes.
I think it had football or different games. So what we did, we played sport. I mean, even in the winter, we stayed up until 6-7 and that was our life. We had football in the winter and cricket in the summer. And when I got a bit older, I'd go out all day and play sport, and that's what we did. Mm-hmm. Play cricket, rugby. You'd go over the field. You didn't know who was over there. Some other guys were with us, and they'd play a game. 3, 5, 10, 20, 40. You'd get on well. I mean, there was no gangs as such when we were younger. I mean, people got into fights and things, but I never particularly did. I just played sport. Yeah. It was also a great way of, you know, getting on with people as well. Mm-hmm. From a little village called Kenfig Hill, and it's halfway between Cardiff and Swansea, which are the two main cities in Wales.
Wales. Now, Wales. Now the listening audience comes from all over the world. Can you help me with Wales?
Yes, Wales is on the west coast of Great Britain. And it's, as you go from London, it's about 2 hours drive. And you go over something called the Severn Bridge. And then the bridge is a very big structure. There are two Severn Bridges. And you go into Wales, you go into Newport, the first city, and then you go to Cardiff. And then Swansea, and they're the three main cities.
One interesting thing you readers might not know is that in 1900, Cardiff was the biggest port in the world for importing and exporting of products.
I never knew that.
Yeah, in 1900.
Not a chance.
Yeah, especially for coal, obviously, for coal coming in. And
sure.
Then the valleys, which goes up to Merthyr Tydfil, which is about an hour from Cardiff, was where the Industrial Revolution took place. I know you readers, or listeners may know that the first ever train journey in the world took place in Merthyr Tydfil, between Dowlais and Merthyr Tydfil in 1804. So it's very industrialised where I come from, and my dad worked in the steelworks, which was built in the 20s in the docks in Port Talbot, which is a...
For me, I've always been curious steelworks. As to why anybody would write a book. So Tim describes a little bit about the history of trying to bring out the truth of Gary Sprake's Great Plane.
We have more or less from the beginning because of Gary's name. And Gary had been offered, I think, more than 20 times to write his autobiography by professionals, but he didn't trust them for the reason that they wanted to emphasise the whistleblowing.
Right.
And Gary wanted to emphasise his playing career, although he appreciates that's part of it. But he didn't want to write a book of an expose breaking it all up again, although you can't avoid that was part of his life. But we didn't want to do that. And what's mentioned in the book
it's not the main part of the book. It's part of it, but not the crux of it, which is to re-establish Gary's reputation.
Tell me about your life when you're writing a book.
I was on summer holidays, and my hobby is collecting signed sports books, especially cricket and football, but of old footballers. I don't like modern footballers. Pre-1980s, 70s, 60s, 50s, and whatever. And a friend of mine was on jury service in the UK. That's compulsory. And he'd been on this financial case for weeks and weeks, and they were having a recess. And he had 4 hours on this recess. He phoned me and said, would you come for lunch? And we met for lunch, and he said, what do you do with your days apart from reading Leeds books on the holidays? I said, oh, read Leeds books. Good joke. He said, you should write one. I said, yeah, I could write one, but how do you get in...
How do you start?
How do you say, contact a footballer and say, hi, can I write your autobiography?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was an in-joke. We talked about that, and what would you do if you wrote it, and you know, how would you write it, and different things. And then he went back to the court case. I went back to read my books. And then I had a phone call from a friend who said, oh, would you like to come to the cricket tomorrow in Swansea? And I went to the cricket, and typical Wales, everybody knows Wales, it rained, so there's no cricket. And he said, oh, and they are teachers who had to work some of the summer holidays. So he said, oh, my friend is coming to meet us. He'd like to meet you. And he said, his uncle's quite controversial. And I said, oh, okay. He said, but I'll tell you when you come to see him. So Stuart came and met me, and we had a couple of drinks. We met, and he said, oh, do you know my uncle is then? I said, well, I don't know your surname, but is it Gary Sprigg? He said, how do you know that? Well, I said, controversial and some Swansea. And then Stuart said to me, oh, well, I'm writing Gary's autobiography. I said, oh, that would be fantastic. And he said, how do you feel? And I said, I think Gary's been really hard done by in the press and the photographs, and I think it's a really tragedy that somebody has been rewritten, really a reinvention of history. And I said, so, can I read it? And he said, well, I haven't actually written anything yet. So, and how long have you been doing it? 6 months. So my other friend, Alan, who's a bit of a character, said, oh, Tim will write it for you. And so I went off the next day, and I emailed Stuart, and I said, this person you may have forgotten is called Gary Sprigg, and that's how the book started.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back, continuing the interview with Tim Johnson and his two books, Careless Hands, The Forgotten Truth of Gary Sprigg, and Kurt, the Alan Curtis Story.
You held my dreams like worthless grains of sand. Careless hands don't care when dreams live through.
Working full time,
and basically spent...
You used a word processor?
I used a word processor, would jot down in handwriting, would go to the library in Leeds, so I would often... I'd take in a game if I could in holidays,
right.
Go up there, take a game, and then spend 2 days extra then in the library making notes, try to take in some interviews. Not all of Gary's ex-colleagues would interview us for reasons of controversy, but many did, and... Most of the Welsh players who didn't play for Leeds I had no problem with, and that was really interesting to meet people you grew up with as internationals who were just people in a bar or in a coffee shop, and you know, and 99% really nice, very down to earth, lots of good stories and anecdotes.
So you started writing at night, on the weekends?
The weekends, usually holidays.
Over what period of time?
2 years.
2 years?
2 years. We split the book 12 chapters, 6 each.
Mm-hmm.
And I took 6 chapters which interested me, and Stuart took 6 which interested him. And it's very intense, especially if you're working full time. And I understand that probably, especially with inexperience, you're not knowing what to do and how to edit. And
just before the ebook days.
Well, the ebook days, but before you have experience. I mean, we wrote 2 books, and certainly the second one was much more, I think, easier to write. And the third one, which I started and didn't actually finish, would have been the best of the three, because we went from the idea of researching and lots of research. To the character, and then the third one, to actually meeting the character first and then putting the research afterwards.
Yes. Right.
So that's a development process that I certainly would have, if I were writing another book, I'm sure I will at one stage sometime, we'll look at the person first, get to know the person, interview them, and then fill in the blanks afterwards. And that's if I'm advising anybody to do ghostwriting, do that first of all. Get to know The second was that Alan also played for Leeds for a short time, and I wanted to get his autograph.
Just for the listening audience, this book is called Kurt, the Alan Curtis Story.
Yes, and Alan also played shortly for Leeds. He was the record signing at the time. He was more famous, though, to play for some team called Swansea City, which is now, many of your listeners will know, in the Premiership at the moment. And he's now the assistant manager, so he's quite high up in that Premiership team. And I met him and with Gary, and he asked Gary for his autograph to sign his book. And then we said to him, "Oh, Kurt, when are you going to get yours done?" And he said, "Oh, it's halfway done." And we said, "Oh, well, I look forward to meeting you and getting signed." He said, "Of course." He's a really, really nice man. And he said, "Oh, of course, you can meet me and I'll sign some stuff for you." And anyway, I happened to meet him about 6 months later in the Swansea City game. I said, "How's that book going?" He goes, "Oh, unreliable. The guys let me down a bit." And we said, "Well, you should have us to do it." And he said, "Yeah, okay." And that's how we got the second one done. And he obviously had read the first one, enjoyed it. It got a lot of publicity because of the questions I just mentioned earlier on. Mm-hmm. We may come back to those later. And yeah, it was a joy, and it was much easier having...
As Tim mentioned earlier, it seemed that fate helped him to get prepared to write this book. Even in his earlier days, he was always concerned and very enthusiastic about sport, and especially his football.
I'm probably what is termed a glory hunter now. I supported the Leeds United for two reasons. One, because they were the best team in Britain and Europe, and they were on television all the time. And in those days, television was one channel on a Saturday night, and they were the main team, and they won. And secondly, because in Port Talbot, there was a sports shop called Selwyn Jenkins, which only sold Leeds memorabilia. So for a birthday or Christmas,
right,
you had no shirts,
right,
you could get Leeds. And I still got the original scarves and belts and things when Leeds won. And that's how I supported Leeds, and I've stuck with them ever since, really.
Huh.
And what's quite interesting is that I worked with six people in the age of between 40 and 50 now, and every one of those supported Leeds. It was a generational thing that,
right,
you would find in South Wales now. People of 40 plus support Leeds. The younger people support Cardiff and Swansea and other teams. I really enjoyed the sports books and interviewing the stars and getting to see some of the people who were idols, I guess you would say, and
sure,
get their autographs and just getting some stories and having a beer. It was great, or a cup of coffee. It was very nice.
Go.
Thanks for listening today. This ends our interview with Tim Johnson. He's currently teaching history in an international school in Germany. His students are certainly benefiting from his knowledge and enthusiasm. Thanks for listening today. You know, the show notes contain a lot of information that you can't listen to here. Be sure and see the links to the materials, the books that are referenced, the song by Des O'Connor. They'll be found on the virtualsuaro.com website. So until next time, this is Virtual Suaro saying have a great day.